You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Who asked those questions?
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my single solitary partner in soccer, David
Goss.
You are soccer.
I am soccer today, by myself.
You know what? This is the core of the show.
This is
what we're building around. All these other pieces, they're interchangeable. Yeah. As a manager, I just need the first name on my team sheet is Boom. David Goss.
Wear the spine.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess I am now by myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know.
I'm a spine-heavy person.
Gotcha.
I've got a strong spine.
Gotcha. Now I'm just thinking about your anatomy in weird, weird ways. Did you see this MLS culture thing before we get to Taylor Twellman?
I did see this.
He's
going to
be on the show.
What,
this is classic. This is like Extra Time in a Twitter meme.
Yeah, so hashtag MLS culture, and then everyone is tagging it. I've got first one here, at Hauk68, MLS culture is having Kai Kamara on your team.
Exactly.
Which is class, because Kai has played.
Or knowing who, like, Nate Jaquia is. Or who's the guy who played at seven different teams?
Oh, by the way, we were talking about tall. Basically, yes. I think who you were thinking of was Justin Braun. I meant to text this to you and Charlie.
Yeah, we were, the Adam John comparisons were rolling in.
Because we had, obviously, Aaron Schoenfeld's back as well.
Yeah.
MLS culture here from Kruvy Man is having to explain who your team is in your own city, but having fans know all about your team on the other side of the world.
Yes. Or MLS culture is when you get a better reception from, you know, when you travel to another city from those fans than you do from other soccer fans.
Basically, half of these are MLS culture is seeing a billboard for another team in their city.
And be like, yes.
And still getting excited.
This
one is very specific. So Mark Fishkin, shout out to Mark Fishkin, legend, said MLS culture's excitement at seeing the Earthquakes Park in that Microsoft ad, even though you're not an Earthquakes fan, which I get. And then Jeff Vikas says MLS culture is getting excited when you see a rare billboard of your team in your own city. June 26th, 2016, found a Wando ad at a bus stop at 28th and Geary. Big moment.
Oh, man.
That is legendary.
Yes.
MLS culture from Coda Stewart is making Tam Gam jokes that no one else in the world gets, but it's okay because we don't really get them either.
Exactly.
Which is money. This is a class feed and everyone should go follow it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's basically Extra Time in a nutshell. We want to be fun and communal. We hope that MLS culture for you is on Mondays and Thursdays. You're listening to us. We have Taylor Twellman coming up. We've got a packed mailbag. We're going to look ahead to MLS week two. But the inevitable happened, Dave. You know what the inevitable was? Tim Howard is playing goalkeeper for Memphis 901. He's back,
no
baby.
Way.
Who would have seen it coming? Curve all those
ball.
Times that he said, I'm retiring and I'll never play again, but didn't sign a goalkeeper for his team. Well, we now know he's back. You have Landon Donovan's first year as a head coach. I know that you do a good amount with USL Championship.
Kicks off this weekend.
Yep.
I'm excited.
Yep.
There's some good stuff to lock in on. San Diego's putting together a decent team. Miami FC is in the league. They've put together a strong group. Tampa Bay Rowdy's one of those groups that is always fairly experienced. Obviously, Phoenix again. New Mexico, there's a report out there. They've put in the bids for stadiums. It's going to be like a whole cultural center. Everything that New Mexico United has done. Did you see their ad campaign coming this season? Awesome.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to be excited about. I think a lot of the new teams that came in last year really finding their feet coming in. And then you've got like San Antonio signed a 16-year-old out of their academy.
Gallegos.
So the future. Yeah, the future of the
Maybe
of
most
the sport.
Importantly, we haven't even mentioned it somehow. Louisville City have their new stadium. It is complete. It is beautiful. It's incredible to see that in American soccer, North American soccer in general, but to see it in the USL Championship is a sign of, I think, what everybody hopes are things to come. So,
have you ever been to Louisville?
I have not been to Louisville.
I have neither been to Louisville. Mm. Are we doing a USL road trip?
Let's talk to producer Anders about where our budget stands.
Okay.
We'll see how that one goes.
Let me know.
USL Championship starts this weekend. ESPN Plus, along with Major League Soccer. You can watch them both there. You probably have that.
Can I promo myself?
Yeah, promo.
3 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus. New York Red Bulls 2 against the Tampa Bay Rowdies with Connor Lade.
Cool. Connor Lade now, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, awesome. We don't have a bell. I'm just bashing Adrian Heath gnomes against your coffee cup. That's our DP bell because there's a new one.
Yeah.
Victor Wanyama from Spurs out of seemingly nowhere. somebody pointed out that on the last show that you said that Montreal weren't going to spin big, and they might not have spent big here.
You don't want to get me started.
What do you think about Victor Wanyama?
As a player in his prime, game changer in MLS, someone from Montreal mentioned to me Diego Chara plus. Ground coverage would be elite in MLS. Over his years in Tottenham, got clean on the ball, simple first passes, can come into the attack late if you're trying to build up, would be a game changer. You add that to tight air, and however Piet fits into this, and now you're going into the conversation of one of the best central midfields in MLS. Has struggled with injuries with his knee, only 28 years old, so still has years if he's healthy, but I don't think there's a huge gamble on this. And from what I've been told, he was really excited about being a part of this project to the extent where he may have actually reached out first and approached Henri about coming over. And I said that I didn't think they'd spend. I think this probably fits in well of you don't have to pay a transfer fee, so there's not a huge guarantee up front. If he's good, he's great. If not, you can kind of move on as Henri starts to get his feet in a year or two.
And they said, look, the contract is 3 years. That's what they put in the release. But in my mind, as I think about MLS, I'm thinking, okay, year one, guaranteed. Years two and three, options. We'll see how Victor Wanyama's knee holds up. Because you mentioned Diego Chara. He's Diego Chara, they hope.
Yeah.
It's not Diego Chara plus. They hope he's Diego Chara, who's been incredibly durable and impactful and like a constant for Portland, since the jump in MLS. If they can get 75% of that with Victor Wanyama, that's a huge coup for them. And they can also have, we think, maybe some flexibility in the contract. Speaking of DPs, there is a legacy here, and David Beckham started it. Just a little PSA for you. The Beckham Effect, a David Hawk 45-minute documentary, will air at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on Friday on FS1.
Get your weekend started.
Yeah. Big congratulations to Will Koons. He helped lead those efforts here within MLS. This is really cool. I've seen the trailers. I will be tuning in because I have a kid and I don't do anything or go anywhere. You maybe should fire up the DVR if you plan on going out, whatever it is. Check it out. Let's get into the weekend, and let's start with this. Yes, soccer is what we focus on, but there is much more to soccer. It's all about community, in my opinion, and I thought the gesture from the Timbers and Merritt Paulson in the wake of the tornado in Tennessee that hit Nashville, we've all seen the footage of David Akam's house or apartment or whatever that is. I mean, ultimately, the devastation wrought in Tennessee. The Timbers, for Sunday's game against Nashville, if you use the code NASHVILLESTRONG to buy a $35 GA ticket with no fees, $15 from each of those tickets is going to be donated to the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee. So that's really cool. And as someone who comes from Tornado Alley, who has cowered in his basement, who has hid under mattresses, who has wondered if this was my day, because I know people whose day it has been, and it's devastating. My heart goes out to everybody in Tennessee, everybody affected, everybody who see the trickle down from something like this. We hope you're getting the help you need, and we're so glad that the MLS community is coming together to help you out. So that's really cool. By the way, Portland, Nashville. One of the Predict Six games. Every week, an opportunity for you to win 50 grand. Predict Six, presented by BetMGM. Here are the six games you are predicting this week. DC, Miami, that one's on Univision. Watch it on Twitter. Also, two-day NA as well. Toronto, NYCFC, good ESPN Plus game. TSN up in Canada. Atlanta, Cincy, that's going to be interesting. Galaxy, Vancouver, those are all on Saturday, then Sunday. Portland, Nashville on ESPN and TSN. And LFC, Philly on FS1 and DAZN. In Canada, you got to pick every single one of the games, win, lose, draw. You are going for points here because I don't think anybody is going to win the 50 grand unless they're like seeing the future. Because only do you have to pick,
I won
games,
last week.
Did you?
I picked Minnesota.
You're not allowed to win.
I also picked Minnesota.
Oh, last week you won the one game.
That's
much different than winning, than getting all 12 right.
I already spent the 50K,
gotcha.
So
yeah, good idea
I need
there.
That
good
to come
idea
through
there.
For
so,
me.
So let's just go this one. I'm going to just spin the wheel.
Okay.
We're going to talk Toronto NYCFC. You got to make a prediction here.
Cool.
I'm looking at the points. 20 points for a Toronto win because they're at home, and then 40 for a draw or 40 for an NYCFC win on the road. Of course, NYCFC preparing for CONCACAF Champions League, so Ronnie Dyla, what kind of roster we put out there? But you were one of the deepest teams.
And Maxime Cheneau suspended because of the red card.
That's true.
So I think it may not get you as many points, but I think I would go with Toronto FC at home opener. I thought they were good last week. Josie looked to step off. That's all going to get better as the weeks go along. They're one of the best teams at home. They don't give up soft goals, really, when playing at BMO. So I go with Toronto on this one.
I'm going to go draw because I think there were some
frailties.
You're just
going to draw every week.
There's 40 points there. There's 40 points that I can take. There are some frailties that they showed sort of late game, and you could see Greg Vanney was frustrated with those. Now, look, there's not every team's going to step up and hit a like postage stamp free kick at the end of stoppage time to beat you. But I just think these two teams, the talent that they have, NYCFC, they will get goals in this game, in my opinion. I'm going to go with a draw there. We'll see what happens. We'll see who gets the points. Make sure you get your ballot in on that one, your most fantasy team as well.
I throw a shout out in there to Portland Timbers for sending us sweet kits. We're going to get the whole set put on it. K-Dog, you're a legend. When I cheer for the Timbers.
Nice. I have mine too, but I felt like I would look like an idiot.
Hey, Portland
Timbers.
You
were wearing yours and I was wearing mine as well. We don't have other people here to kind of like throw it off. So
we just be, we would be Bert and Ernie.
That's a comparison that you could make, yes. Yeah. DC United Inter Miami is another national TV game on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern on Univision. Of course, Taylor Twellman on that Timbers and Nashville game on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. And then LAFC and the Philadelphia Union finish us off at Sunday, 10:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Speaking of Taylor Twellman, he's on the line now. Taylor, what's up, man? This is an AT&T call to the field. How you doing?
How you guys doing? What's
good.
Going on?
Good. Good. Better that we now have a weekly dose of Taylor Twellman all over the ESPN channels. If people miss banter, tell them how they can watch it. Tell them what it is.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, it's not behind a paywall. It's free. So every Wednesday, 2 o'clock, it will be live on Twitter. It will be on Facebook, YouTube, and the ESPN app, which was a massive negotiation struggle, but we pulled it off. We did it. As anything, boys, you guys know this. It's a work in progress, but in my 11th year at ESPN, it's important to me that I try and prove a point internally that you can do a show strictly about American soccer from all levels of women, Yanks abroad, USL, Major League Soccer. And once the studio is complete, I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised at how many resources, how many people are really behind this.
I thought you really hit the nail on the head in that first episode with the concept of helping guys like Michael Parkhurst, former retired guys, learn how to date and be normal people now that they've retired. I really like that part of the segment.
Well, Michael Parkhurst has got a lovely wife and a lovely family. It's just nice he finally took Sam out for a date now that he's 45 years old and retired.
Banter, check that one out. Of course, we're happy to have Taylor on Twellman every single day on Twitter, too. The big news, man, it's all about Jose Martinez. Everything in this league right now kind of comes back to him in so many ways, whether it be award season, whether it be the Eastern Conference hierarchy, et cetera, et cetera. How do you think they should go about trying to replace Jose Martinez? It's the big debate that we had on Monday.
It's a great debate because it is something that very few times in my MLS career as a player and now as an analyst. So we're dating back to 2002. I don't remember an injury that's completely changed the complexion of a league and even the conference. And Jose Martinez is that kind of injury. Now, when you look at it, there's two ways to look at this. First and foremost, I would give Adam John a reasonable chance to do this because the entire system that Frank DeBoer wants to play is to put Barco and PT Martinez in spots to succeed. And that is all based off a target forward. Now, everyone watching this and listening to this is going to say, well, wait a minute. You're saying Adam John's going to be Jose Martinez. No, I'm not. But in the tactical formation and the tactical setup, just let him be up front. Let him do what he needs to do. But it's more so about Barco and PT taking over for what Joseph brought. You're not going to be able to replace 25-plus goals. You're just not. The second part of this, and this is something where all of us on the inside get into the weeds, is I wonder if MLS uses this Jose Martinez injury to maybe reassess the CBA and the roster capabilities. Because if you really look at this, if they put them on IR, they get $250,000 budget relief. Now, that's not enough. And the way the league is set up, I'd argue if you lose a designated player in the first 6 to 7 weeks of the season, that franchise should be allowed to replace that with a DP caliber player or find a way to find more money to allow a better player to come in. If the rosters aren't set up this way and the roster regulations, guys, then I'm not saying you get relief, but you can't ask franchises to go spend money on big name players and have them in the roster. And then if you lose them in the first 5 or 6 weeks, you lose your season. I just wonder if the owners, front offices and whatnot are going to use this injury as maybe a talking point, as I think they should, especially if you're looking at the first 6 weeks of the season.
You're just losing so much within the cap and within your ability to be flexible. And you're also, if you do this, you're putting Joseph on IR. You're saying he will not be back. We will not get him. We'll not be able to touch him. And we've seen how loans have affected the league, especially on the DP front as well. We saw J.J. Williams, per Sam Stachel, signed. He's a GA guy that the Crew let go, and he fits in really nicely in the cap. Do they need to go get somebody else? Do they have to go get someone else to really reach the heights or even approach the heights that we thought they might in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an overreaction here. I don't think Atlanta United's going to miss the playoffs. I think they might have to fight to get in, but there's a lot of quality on that roster that can carry this team through. I do believe, and I know one of your colleagues, Matt Doyle, thinks it's a completely absurd idea, but I do believe Frank DeBoer has maybe, you know, thought about playing a false number nine and playing maybe Barco there or playing maybe PT Martinez there because they have a wealth of players coming out of the midfield. I give Adam John, I'd say a solid 4 or 5 games. If you're relying on J.J. Williams, then I think you're going to be a lot's going to be left to be desired, right? But on the other hand, I do believe they need to go find. The problem is, guys, as we just said, $250,000 of budget relief. J.J. Williams is a generation Adidas player, so he's essentially a free player. If they're going to find anything, it's probably going to be within the league. And I keep an eye on Diego Rubio. He's not starting for Colorado. I know salary-wise that may not fit in, but you never know how they manage that, if they trade, whatever. But there's a player there that may be unhappy, and he may fit into that scheme of what Frank DeBoer wants to do.
The thing I keep thinking when I hear these conversations, Taylor, and we had it, and I was listening to Allocation Disorder, and they were going through, Sam and Paul were going through all these, like, yeah, you don't get the roster relief, or excuse me, the salary cap relief, but then you'd have to spend a bunch of GAM to go get a Diego Rubio or a Christian Ramirez or fill in the blank any striker throughout the league, because that other team knows you're up against it. And so then can you actually fit it in under the cap? I feel like in so many ways they're hamstrung in that sense. Maybe they have to go outside the league to try to find a way to fix this. Either way, they're in a tough spot here. I'm going to pose this to you. And I did my MVP rankings yesterday, now that Joseph Martinez is out of the mix, because I thought it was Vela and Joseph. I'm going to take Carlos Vela off your plate here. You cannot name him because he is the no-duh, bet-everything-on-it MVP candidate. If you're looking ahead now, trying to be a little predictive, who else is in that mix? Who would you bet on if Vela and Joseph are no-goes?
PT Martinez.
Wow.
Because let me ask you guys this. If Atlanta's a top three seed in the Eastern Conference and he's played well, it's a hard argument not to put him in that conversation. Because if you look at 77 plus goals over 3 years for Joseph Martinez, and you don't replace that really, and PT Martinez becomes your leader and the quality of player that they need, I think PT's got a real argument there. So yes, is it an outside thought? Kind of, but the truth of the matter is, this is the former South American Player of the Year. He's not 35 years old. You guys know better than I do how many players have come into MLS and struggled that first year, and then the second year, all of a sudden, something clicks. I just keep an eye on PT in Atlanta, because if they turn the corner in the sense that they kind of withstand without Joseph Martinez, and they're in the Eastern Conference playoffs, and they actually have a good, successful run, I think it's going to be a hard argument to keep him out of that conversation.
Some of the other names we thought you'd mention, and you locked in on PT there, the Galaxy, of course, Pavone, but mainly Chicharito. A little bit of a struggle week one. You mentioned how long it takes to settle in. You played this position in a similar way. Talk us through timing, how long it's going to take, what he needs from the Galaxy around him to peak and be the player they want him to be year one.
I think it's a good question, just because so much has been made about Chicharito replacing Zlatan. And I understand 50-plus goals and all that off the field. But I actually did this on Banter in the first episode. You can't play the same way. They had 27 crosses against Houston, and yet Chicharito's up front by himself. It's just not going to work. He has been extremely successful when he's got some support in and around him. I'm not saying they have to play two forwards, but they've got to be able to get him off of the two center backs. He's got to be more mobile. He's got to have the freedom to run and run off of someone. I look at Pavone's goal. He's a special player. It's almost as if all of us forgot that the guy played in the 2018 World Cup for Argentina. But the truth is, he's got the quality. But you can't have 27 crosses with Chicharito against two MLS center backs. The truth of the matter is, MLS center backs historically are good with dealing on crosses. Now, that's changed over the last 3 or 4 years as more internationals come in and some teams struggle. They're better with the ball at their feet, but they're not natural, quote unquote, defenders. But throughout his entire career, Javier Hernandez has needed support in and around him. And what scares me, if I'm a Galaxy fan, is that Scalotto after the game saying, we need to do that more. I actually think they need to change their style that suits him. I said this before the season started, 17 and a half goals, over, under. Would you take the over or under? I actually would take the under, but I think the Galaxy are going to be a better team.
You and I in the same boat on that. Vancouver going to LA this week and supposed to be a sellout, 10 p.m. Eastern on TSN, ESPN Plus. You can check that one out. Should be a good game. How much patience will the MLS world, will the Galaxy world, will Chicharito himself have here, Taylor? Because if it starts slow and it keeps going slow, this is going to be the story of the league.
Well, any good goal scorer that lives and breathes for scoring goals, you saw signs of it. It's not. There's going to be very, very little patience with Chicharito. You even saw it against Houston Dynamo, throwing his arms up. He was a little upset. He was frustrated. He's as competitive as he's ever going to be. But if you're constantly answering questions on replacing Zlatan, and at times I have found Chicharito to be talking too much. Because the truth of the matter is this. How many players transcend the sport? Maybe 3 or 4. Zlatan was one of those. So the only way Javier Hernandez is going to shut people up is Galaxy winning and him contributing. So the fact that he is saying, well, yeah, Zlatan scored 50 goals, but he didn't win any championships. I don't have any pressure. I'm not totally sure I'm going to buy that. And I know that's an indirect way of him talking about it, trying to be open and transparent. But pressure's on for him to succeed and pressure's on LA to win. Obviously, they're still looking to make a couple moves. They believe defensively they need another upgrade. They've had an offer rejected over the last 48 to 72 hours for a center back, Mexican national team center back for that matter. So when you look at that and how they're trying to go about it, I think LA Galaxy are going to be a better team, but I'm not totally sure it's going to be because Chicharito's on the field.
Taylor, who are Mexican national team center backs that are in the pool?
I don't know. You can probably figure it out on your own. I'm sure there's a couple rumors laying around on the internet.
Let's talk about a team that has rumors, that has some pressure as well. You were there for the first game ever for Inter Miami. You were around them for those 48 hours, and you've talked Paul McDonough on all of them. What's the feeling inside that club going into that game, coming out of it, of expectations of who they are, of who they want to be?
That's interesting. I mean, listen, Diego Alonso is he is addicting. I mean, you talk to him, his eyes are like he's looking at you like he's going to run right through you. And all I did was ask him how his English is. Like you're talking about a guy that's got a real competitive streak. He's come here to win. What stood out to me is this. He said he needs 6 games to assess his team. Now, listen, part of me understands that as an ex-player. Preseason short, I get all that. Diego's trying to figure out what works in MLS, what doesn't. But I'm not sure he's got 6 games to get his first win. I'm not totally sure he's got 6 games to dominate a game either. So it's going to be very interesting how they play at DC, but more importantly, that home opener. They need to put on a show because the 2 or 3 years coming up now until they build Miami Freedom Park, they've got to win that crowd. Because then when that stadium is built, guys, now you've got 2 different counties and now you've broadened your brand, but they've got to win. They've got to win now. I thought it was very interesting to me. They attacked with 5 and defended with 5. It was almost like half court basketball to a certain extent. I think part of that is the personnel on the field, Roman Torres, Alves Pau, Ben Sweat, guys that aren't completely comfortable going up against Diego Rossi, Carlos Vela going the other way. So I understand that aspect. But I think the adjustment from game 1 to game 2 is going to be very interesting. In my opinion, playoffs or it's a bust. You have to make the playoffs if you're Miami, and they will make 2 big signings in the realm of MLS. People, it's not Neymar. It's not Messi, it's not Ronaldo, it's not Griezmann, but in the world of Major League Soccer and the amount of money spent, they're going to make 2 signings by May 1st, maybe June 1st, a little bit later. That's going to change the complete complexion around the team. And then all of a sudden, you guys and I, we're going to be doing this interview in the summer, and we're going to say, well, wait a minute, Miami better be in the top 2 or 3 seeds in the East then.
Wow. Okay, we'll stay tuned there. And that kind of reminds me of how I've thought about this team, which is they're battling not just themselves and what they're able to accomplish, but also the expectations that they've set for them. It's a complicated situation. how do you think they'll navigate that aspect of it? Because both they come out and say, we're going to be sexy. We're going to have big names. We're linked with all these guys. Our coach is top of the top. But also you see that roster, that lineup in week one, and you think, oh boy, they're going to have a hard time bridging the gap. And they're just going to have to be sort of on their toes in the way people think about them.
Weeby, first off, between us three right now and everyone listening, if you're going to be the sexy team, why was your opening day uniform not fuchsia pink? Like, not just bold and brash, because that's how you're acting. That's how you're saying it. And you are the only team with pink, and you come out with a pair of shorts that looks like, well, it was white shorts washed with red socks, and it's got a little tint. And I say that, we all laugh and we're joking, but the truth of the matter is that kind of embodies my questions about the team. If you say one thing, I'm all in, but then it's what you do. And it's going to be very interesting over the first 4 or 5 weeks, Weeby, to your question, how they navigate that. Because Diego Alonso is basically Jose Mourinho in Mexico. And yet you want to tell me that you're going to be possession style, you're going to high press, you're going to get after it. Yet historically, your pedigree is pragmatic, going the other way. There were signs against LAFC that they've got something, but then Robles made 4 or 5 saves. LAFC could easily won that game 4 or 5-0, right? So it's going to be interesting how they navigate that. But I'll tell you right now, winning solves everything, and especially early on. But I do believe their lack of embracing the color pink kind of embodies that they're kind of still in the middle a little bit, trying to figure that out. Long term wise, I think they're great the way they built this. I do think Diego Alonso is the right hire. When a Roberto Martinez says no and Patrick Vieira doesn't come through, he's had real success continentally, and that works. Pizarro's one that I think the jury's out. Listen, you sign the most expensive player in Liga MX. That's a massive statement. Absolutely. But this is a player that has a ton of peaks and valleys. As the designated player on your team right now, you can't afford that. How does he navigate the pressure with being a designated player in the first 6 weeks is another one.
You know who is comfortable in pink? Carlos Vela. went out and stole a little bit of the thunder with that pink blazer. I like that. A little message on the left-footed chip. Delicious. I'm going to just come straight to you on this one. Carlos Vela, the best player in MLS history. Yes or no?
No. Not as of yet. No. That's very difficult for me to... he's in the conversation and will be. But I also think Jose Martinez is going to have something to say. The fact that, yes, he's injured, but he would have scored 100 goals in 3.5 years with his rate. Carlos Vela is in that conversation, but with all due respect, you need to win an MLS Cup. That's why I will never be in that conversation and never would have been in that conversation, because I lost 4 of them. So the truth of the matter is you need to win. I think Robbie Keane was in that discussion for how he dominated the league. But I do think Carlos Vela, when it's all said and done, is going to be 1A, 1B, 2, whatever it may be, he is in the conversation. And the ability to score that goal in a game where 1,000 miles an hour, people are going around you, and the goalkeeper wasn't that far out. We're all busting Robles and what he did. He wasn't even 6 yards out, guys. And so from 19 yards out, you get chipped on your 31st birthday. It just, you know what, it would be nice. It'd be nice if Carlos Vela actually did an interview on national TV, wouldn't it? Like, nope. I wish Carlos would embrace it and be open and say, yeah, like, do the interview. But the final whistle blows. He's immediately in the locker room. I just kind of wish Carlos would embrace it a little bit, because he's got a great personality. He speaks very good English, better than I do in certain levels. And I just wish we heard a little bit more from Carlos, because that was a great moment.
Breaking news, Carlos Vela, second guest on Banter on ESPN. You can see it on YouTube, Twitter, and the app.
You know, Benny Sal and I got him, so oh, yeah, make those moves. True. Make those moves.
Taylor's washed now. He's too far away. Benny's coming for him. Let me ask you about this, because I think it's interesting, and we talked about this a lot 4 months ago, but week one, LAFC lines up with Rodriguez, Rossi, and Vela on that front three, and we all thought Rodriguez was brought in to replace Rossi. We all thought that Cifuentes and Janela were brought in for Atuesta and K replacements, Palacios. We talk about this being a selling league. Were you surprised that there hasn't been more conversation around Rossi? And are you sure of what LAFC's future looks like in terms of a club that brings in young South American players and how they then move them on?
David, ask me that question June 1st. I think, and the reason why I say that is I think there is more money to be had for LAFC if you wait until June 1st, 2020. And I think the way the sell-on fees were negotiated, I think that's a big part of the discussion. Now, listen, you're 100% right in the sense that Rodriguez was brought in for Rossi, and I still think he is. But when Diamande and Bradley Wright Phillips are healthy, Bob Bradley has some real decisions. Atuesta is on the radar of multiple scouts. And quite frankly, what I'm hearing and who I talk to, he's the name brought up more than Diego Rossi. Now, Rossi's a game changer. He's got the pace. I get all that. But 2019 was a breakthrough year for Atuesta in the eyes of scouts. And I think Janela is a special player. The way he put on a show, silky smooth. You can tell there's a little bit of an Italian-ness to his game with little touches here and there. The kid's 21, guys, and he looked like he was boss in the midfield. I just love the way they built this roster. But I do believe and firmly believe June 1st, July 1st, whenever it may be, the roster us three are talking about right now, that's not going to be the roster come this summer.
Those guys are getting some shine in CCL. 4 out of 5 teams advanced. What'd you take away from the round of 16? Do you have CCL fever?
Yeah, I always do, Weeby. All three of us do, yeah. Right? We Good. Love it because it's our version of Champions League. I played in the first version of it, and there was a time when the Revs didn't want a home game, so we played both games in Costa Rica. We played one game in Bermuda, and now for me to go an LAFC game against Lyon, who's the best team in Liga MX, and the stadium sold out, and Bob Bradley, in my opinion, Bob Bradley prepared his team, and they performed the best, or in the discussion of it, I've ever seen an MLS team go against a Liga MX team. See, Lyon right now is the best team, right? We all know Monterrey, but Monterrey's in disarray right now and they can't get out of their own way. Lyon was playing at a high level. And LAFC should have won that game 6-0. Lyon had maybe a half a chance, and that was because Vermeer tripped over his own ankles. The truth is, Bob Bradley and LAFC, they put on a performance. I think they have a real shot. I really do. The way the season schedule and MLS has been set up, traditionally, you guys and I would be talking about this, and they would have already played the next round already, but now they've got a little break here. I think that works in MLS's favor, those clubs. Jose Martinez hurts Atlanta. Otherwise, I would have said Club America's there to be had. I just like LAFC and the way Bob had them prepared. Completely played Lyon off the pitch.
How let down are you about Seattle and what happened and the way they've talked about this being the year for that competition for them, the work they did early with Sao Paulo? How much does that hurt you, and what do you think about it for the club?
Well, I was sitting there saying, David, that if they get to the CONCACAF Champions League final, you're talking about a dynasty in the way that they've done this since 2016-17, and yet they fell flat on their face. You can't be on the road up by 2 goals and then allow that team to come back. You're the better team. Now, listen, I get no Nicolas Ladero and whatnot, but you're at home. You're on turf. It's not warm weather. Olympia's showing up there. Like, you have to win that game in advance. Extremely disappointing. You can hear it from Brian Schmetzer postgame. And I think the players understand it. Jao Paulo is a real deal, and I think he's going to be good. But that result's going to haunt Seattle, even if they win the Supporter Shield this year. They're going to look back on this and say, what if?
Montreal do not have Supporters Shield aspirations. Well, maybe they do, but they not realistically. Sorry, Impact. No. But Thierry Henry in his first year, I've argued, and Dave and I have gone back and forth
a little
bit.
I'm back in.
You're back off? Okay. Yeah. Thierry Henry and his pragmatism, I think that's an encouraging sign for Montreal because he doesn't have the talent to do much more than that at this point. But then they get a DP in Victor Wanyama from Spurs. Where did the Impact stand, and what do you think about Thierry's first 3 games with Montreal so far?
Caught me by surprise. I don't know about you guys, but it's completely caught me by surprise. I love one of the best attacking players of my generation and that I've ever seen is one of the more pragmatic coaches we've ever seen. Now, in fairness, I think he has to be. I also think we're seeing a mature Thierry Henry that has learned from the past, and Monaco was an absolute disaster, and only he truly knows what went on internally. But on the outside, we all saw it. It was a disaster. And for him to make a statement with a depleted roster, no real superstars, and the way he's done it and gone about it, I am very impressed. Now, it's going to be interesting how they grow each week. And I think the one thing I've noticed, it's not like Henri's coming with all these grand ideas. I think he's trying to build the foundation and move forward week in and week out. But for them to advance in CONCACAF Champions League already is a win, in my opinion, because I didn't see that happening. And now you're adding a designated player, the quality of Wainama that he is. How he adjusts to playing on turf early on in the year will be interesting. I'm impressed with Henri, and it's only better for this league that coaches are coming here to refine their craft. Because if you get a better gig leaving out of MLS, we all talk about selling players. Imagine that. Imagine the capability and the kind of coaches you're going to get. It only makes the league better. And Thierry Henry's success is going to have a huge say in that.
I want to cover a league in which ambition is rewarded and ambition is number one, whether it's coaches, whether it's players, whether it's clubs. And I think we are slowly but surely pushing that way in MLS. Let's just get real quick. Week one, the teams that don't get the love that they should, everybody complains, 25 minutes on Atlanta United for us and Chicharito and the big names and yada, yada, yada. What's the team that you want to give some love to that deserves some love that maybe hasn't gotten it in that big sort of national way after week one?
I want to say Columbus. I thought the way they showed up, obviously early red card helps them, but still they had a different attitude. Zella Ryan is a special player, but I'm going to say the Colorado Rapids, because at the last quarter of the season last year, you looked at it, times have already changed, and you already saw Robin Fraser look at it and say, you know what, this, they've got something. How many teams, you talk about accountability and teams going after, how many teams on the road go for 3 points? I mean, us three could say right now, very few. And so for me, opening week at DC, the last 10 minutes, you get after it. You're on the front foot. You high press. You deserve 3 points. And the truth of the matter is this. The way the Eastern Conference and Western Conference playoffs are set, you're out of conference games on the road. You're playing with house money. So more often than not, if you go get 3 points and you go for them, and there are going to be times you get a tie and times you lose, but the more often you get 3 points, you're now making ground up for a game that really doesn't matter for your playoff hopes, if that makes any sense. And so early on in the year, Robin Fraser deserves a ton of credit. They're a deep team. He's got them playing at a high level. I just hope that front office understands and notices what they've got there, because I think Colorado may have something to say. I know we're only week one in. They may have something to say in the Western Conference, and it's going to be completely surprised to a lot of people, because all we do is talk about the top five or six franchises in the league. But I think Colorado and Robin Fraser may do something.
Exciting work for two OG clubs there, and what can happen in 2020. We were going to ask you which team you're most worried about, but I'm going to switch that a little on you and just give you what I want you to talk about, which is FC Cincinnati. They put in a ton of money in the offseason. They invested a lot. They seem to get their squad right, and then they're coachless a week out of the season. What do you expect them to do with that position, and whether they get a permanent signing soon or not, do you still think they can be successful in 2020?
I don't know, David. I really don't. I mean, listen, you get the stadium plans in, the training facility, all the infrastructure that ownership group has done. It has been spectacular. Absolutely. But it's a business in soccer, and the soccer part, they haven't gotten right. That's fact, not opinion. And that is anyone that has two eyes and a half a brain, me, can notice it, right? You look at it and say, wait a minute, this isn't right. Now, do they have a decent roster compared to last year? Absolutely. But if you have turmoil at the top in the sense that you don't know who the coach is, whether the interim coach is going to be there for how long, is a new coach coming in and going to look at this system and style of play, look, say, wait a minute, what's going on? So their general manager and their team president need to look at, you kind of limit yourself because you built the team for the former head coach. So now you can't just go get any head coach, because what if the head coach comes in and it's like, oh, I don't like him. Well, you can't. He's a DP. We just got him. I don't like him. Well, you can't. Like, so they've really handcuffed themselves, and they're literally not even through 2 weeks of their second season. It's just remarkable how much the soccer aspect of this has been real struggle for FC Cincinnati.
I'm going to make a guess, and that guess is the head coach will be Dutch.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going out on a limb there.
You're going out on a limb,
yeah. Yeah, that's. I won't guarantee that one. I don't think it deserves it. Before we get you out of here, there are some... there's some more games this weekend. I mean, look, MLS right now, I'm looking at all these, preparing for them, researching. Just that extra 90 minutes, the extra two teams is already blowing my mind in the amount of work it is. And now USL Championship is back, too. I know you had Jake Edwards in the building at ESPN. What'd you take away from chatting with him? What are you looking forward to in USL this year?
USL is extremely lucky to have Jake leading their helm. He's got real aspirations for that league. You obviously see the new stadiums being built. Louisville City is one of those. You go to Jake Edwards' Twitter feed, he's got a great time lapse of that stadium going up. That's obviously something for me. I just, when you listen to Jake Edwards talk, it's eerily similar to the Don Garber, right, of Major League Soccer, in the sense that he has aspirations of having, you know, 12, 14, 18 solid, strong markets with their own stadiums, their own infrastructure. And I just think it makes the sport better. You guys know me better than a lot of people on the inside. I believe in inclusive, not exclusive. And we've got to find a way as a country where every market feels like they have a say. They have a part in this developing players and doing that. And I think USL is going to have a huge impact on trying to set up the infrastructure of this country when the World Cup shows up in 2026. I mean, if you look at what MLS has done, how many teams have they taken, cities have they taken from USL because of that success? So you look at it and they're building it. And I just think Jake Edwards is a great leader. I think their relationship with MLS is extremely strong, which is important. And on a side note, he wants to be the first league that has a head injury sub rule. The fact that he's being proactive on that for me, I've said that for the last 6 years, US should lead the charge and literally have everyone else follow them because it's what science tells us. So I enjoyed sitting down with Jake. I always do. But USL is extremely lucky to have him at the helm.
Big fan of science here on Extra Time. Just want to throw that out there. Top to bottom, science.
I wasn't good at science, though, in school. Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah, well, we'll give you bullet points, Taylor. You're really good at delivering those. Look, banter, Wednesdays, 2 p.m. Eastern, ESPN app, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. It's on demand. You can go watch anytime. You don't have to watch it live. It's completely free, as Taylor said, which, shout out to The Athletic. Love your coverage, but I do have to pay for that. It is what it is. Actually,
well, it's free because he just wears the gray hoodie with the nice ice, though,
right,
on the wrist. It's an impressive dichotomy right
there's
now.
There's no budget for for wardrobe.
You the just suit keep budget it went out with the free, but the ESPN money
pays
for
it. It reminds me, I do have one more question for you. I sat down with Carolyn Kendall Betts, St. Louis owner, and they're building something amazing there. New stadium renderings came out today, and they're just gorgeous. You are very close, I'm sure, to what they're doing and their thought process. They have until 2022, but that's not very long. No. How do they get this right? What are they doing right now?
The most important thing is to make sure that training facility and stadium and everything is done right. They're going to do it downtown. I think something that is understated in our league right now, it would be the first training facility downtown. It will be next to the stadium. I think that's also going to have a huge say in 2026 when these nations come here. St. Louis is going to be at the forefront because you've got the stadium right there for a friendly. You've got three or four training facilities. It's downtown. The Arch is there. So all that's important. But what I've said to Carolyn and what I've said to anyone that's coming into this, you're not joining the league 10, 12 years ago where you get a little room to grow. Look at FC Cincinnati. So they've got to make sure they get their soccer business done right. They will do that. I promise you that. When that is announced, you guys then will have me on and say, whoa, where did this come from? But right now it's all about making sure the governor, the mayor, everyone in St. Louis is behind that stadium, that infrastructure, because that city, the moment that thing's built, the canopy's over the stadium, you're going to be talking about a real environment and something that's going to be a huge part of World Cup qualifying for both men and women.
Taylor, when you're the first general manager of St. Louis MLS, do we have to go through PR? Or can we just go straight to you for that interview?
Guys, I can't hear you. There's been audio. So I appreciate everything you guys have done. Feel free. No, it will be fun. It will be fun to say the least. And more than likely, I'll be sitting here talking to you bozos anyway.
Oh, there you have it. Taylor Twellman at Taylor Twellman on Twitter. You already follow him, I am sure. And you see him on ESPN as well. Taylor, thank you for your time, man. Banter is awesome. We love having more of the content out in the wild here. Have a good one, man.
Yeah, no problem, boys. Well done.
Oh, Taylor Twellman's home office. Extra Time, Sports Center. It's all the same. It's basically the same thing. You say it in the same spots.
What do you think it's like just living life up here.
Oh, really?
You know, I've flown on multiple flights with Taylor. He's always first class, and I'm always in the back of the plane.
I've come to terms with the fact that I'll never be first class. It's okay.
I don't think I care.
I don't care either, but I just know.
I flew back from San Francisco for a certain person's wedding.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend was first class.
Oh.
And I was not. And the guy, she got upgraded, and the guy in my row, like, he's like, I don't know if someone's going to sit in the middle. I was like, no, I don't think so, because my girlfriend just got upgraded. And he gave me this look like,
She's leaving you.
And I was like, what do I care?
She's leaving you behind. ESPN
it's life,
Plus,
baby.
The game of the week. What do you got? What are you watching? What do you care about?
I think this is an obvious one, so I'm sorry for low-hanging fruit, but Seattle's hosting Columbus. Columbus, I had as top three in the East. Seattle, I have as top three in the West. I thought both of them performed well in week one. Seattle, it took some time. Basically, Jordan Morris coming off the bench, which shifted Roldan into a more comfortable spot. But they don't have CCL, so you'd expect the Stars, you know, to start in this one. Maybe Lodero available, because apparently he's out in training. Completely clean. Svensson as well.
Really? Yeah. He's in training. Lodero is in training.
They're both at training. They're both suited up. I don't know where they're at, but that allows Schmetzer to move his pieces probably into a more comfortable one. So I think that that's the easy pick for me in Columbus. They played well. It was week one, but they were man up for 87 minutes. So how do they take that, move forward, go on the road, probably have to play a little bit more behind the ball in this one, and how does Zellerion perform?
I want to see Morris against Harrison Offal.
Yeah.
I really, really like that matchup.
You think he's better than Brandon? Maybe.
Possibly. Just a good, entertaining matchup for me. I'm going to go Atlanta-Cincinnati, 7 p.m. on Saturday. Why? Because I want to see what Frank DeBoer is going to do. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's debating it. Is it going to be the false nine? I don't think it will be. I don't know why you would go through your entire preseason unless they were really working that wrinkle in, which, again, I don't know why they would have spent that much time doing it unless Frank DeBoer has, like, the all-seeing eye and he's like, oh, well, Joseph is going to go down, and then what do? I think they'll go Adam John. I think that's probably the right move, just to see. You have to at least give him a chance. An opportunity, also, and there's not a better opportunity than home against FC Cincinnati. Like, you should be able to win this game. Yeah. He should be able to, against those center backs, no offense, Cincinnati, still haven't shown it, to be what you need him to be, which is basically just, like, honestly, a wall for Pitty and Barco to pass off of and run off of. He's not a bad passer of the ball. He can find them in the right positions and then just get in the box and see what falls to you. Maybe it's a cross. Maybe it's a rebound. Maybe it's nothing. It doesn't matter. Just give him that one opportunity to just see. And it's probably not going to be one. It'll probably be more than that. I just don't see them switching it up immediately, especially after how good Pitty's been behind that striker, running off of him, and Barco too.
I have to wait for Charlie to get back to getting the subject. I don't go lone soldier on this one. Yeah,
Charlie can handle that one. Huh?
I would agree that this is the one you take. Producer Anders thinks that FC Cincinnati gets a W here.
That's crazy.
But Jurgen Locadia, I like what I saw from him in the late game against Red Bulls, and one thing you're gonna see is unbelievable athlete, like size and strength and speed to be that coordinated, clean on the ball, impressive. How it then fits into a team and how effective it is,
that's the question. Like Taylor said, FC Cincinnati, I don't know that they have to blow it all up because Johan de May has been there.
Yeah,
but like, there's this constant question of who they are, and they were just starting to sort of verbalize that and have you see it on the field with Ron Jans, even if the results weren't there last year.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of hit the reset button again.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not. All right, who has the most pressure going into week two? Who's feeling it? Which is weird to say, but I think the reality now, because there's one more team in each conference, you got to be on from the start or else your playoff spot's going to start slipping away pretty soon.
The one we have on top of our list, and I think one we both agree on, is Portland Timbers, because you're starting with two home games. So from last year, which is we're on the road for 14 games, whatever we get is gravy. Shout out Portland Timbers. You have to get a result. You also showed some holes and some deficiencies against Minnesota. So how can you adjust to that and prove that it was a single mistake? It wasn't structural with the way your team's built. One of the things discussed is, should they sit behind the ball and counter and be that team? I don't think there's any coach in MLS that comes into the year saying that's what they're going to do. And there's no the Rapids way letter, the first interview, I love to play expansive attacking soccer, this is who I am. Every coach is going to do that. Then the results start to change that. You're not at that point yet, so what can the Timbers show that they have?
Which is, really, it's deja vu from last year. Home struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And they got tested and are getting tested off the jump with it. This is a stat that I'd forgotten, but now remember. The Portland Timbers, despite making the playoffs, despite finishing sixth and having that terrible start on the road that they had to sort of slog through to get to their home games, they had the third fewest wins in the Western Conference at home. The Houston Dynamo had more wins. The Rapids had more wins. The San Jose Earthquakes had more wins at home. Only Sporting KC and the Vancouver Whitecaps had fewer. That's not an issue that can carry over. Not just because it's Portland and that stadium's full and the Timbers Army expects yada yada. Because they went out and spent so much money and their expectations, I think, are even a step up maybe from what they were a year ago. Because at this time a year ago, they didn't have Brian Fernandez.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like, okay, well, we need to get another year out of Diego Valeri, Sebastian Blanco. This year, you went and reinforced the back line. You went and got Jimmy Chara. You went and got...
Two forwards.
Yes, Mora. I mean...
And Nizgoda.
It's time.
Yeah.
It's time to show that home is a fortress and we're not the team that we were
last
year.
Which is an anomaly for MLS to struggle at home. I mean, the whole conversation around MLS is, can you get results on the road? So dropping results at home is just a non-starter for being a competitive team in MLS.
Galaxy under pressure?
I don't think so. Because I think, one, they have the structure where they're not going to be affected by outside noise. There are some teams in MLS where you say, you got to be entertaining week one and get the fans coming back and be a part of it. That was both of us.
No,
same group chat?
That was
oh, wow.
That was you.
Okay, congratulations.
That was you, not muting yours.
I don't think that is an issue for this Galaxy team. One, because it's Chicharito. People will come back. He's a star. The Mexican community there, the LA community, they'll come watch him play after week one. And I think LA Galaxy are smart enough to not panic. Now, I don't know who Mexican national team center back depth charts are right now. I've got mine on my...
Yeah, that's interesting, huh?
That one really caught me off guard because we heard the rumors from Argentina.
Yeah, the Alan Franco stuff.
Yeah, so I was a little bit
surprised. So start combing through the 18s, the squads that my guy Tata Martino is putting out just to see who maybe has a club situation that might just work for the LA Galaxy.
That's interesting.
We'll see. Yeah, that's the one. Edson Alvarez is the one, right?
I don't think that's real.
You don't think that's real?
I think they put an attempt in because it worked with Chicharito. It worked with Uriel Antuna that, you know.
Hey, things aren't working
Dennis
out perfectly.
He also has that relationship.
Yeah.
But Edson Alvarez plays for Ajax. And he's already over there. And he's entering his prime. And he's a starter for Tata Martino at multiple positions when he comes into the camp. I think it's more like a Nelson Araujo. Types where he's struggling for minutes a little bit, sort of what Osvaldo Alanis had and came to San Jose. It's probably more in that camp of a guy 27 to 31 who's looking for permanent minutes. And also, if you play with Chicharito and Jonah, like Tata's going to watch you, right? There's value to getting into the national team. You know he values the league and what you do there. So it makes sense for guys like that. I don't believe yet the Diego Lainez's, the Tecatitos, the Edson Alvarez's that are going to come to MLS with the tail between their legs at 22 before they've really established themselves.
Their tail wouldn't be between the legs. They're coming to play with Chicharito and Jonah, one of the biggest clubs in North America.
Fair, but we know what their goals
are. Yeah, I know. I hope it's Edson Alvarez, but I probably will be wrong about that one. Before we get to the mailbag, the random team you're watching in week two. What's the team that maybe we haven't talked about or haven't given love or just... Other than the preview, the airtime has been minimal.
I'll say Orlando, and I think I had some interesting conversations with Orlando fans. One of the cliche comments has been they looked better this week than they did last year under James O'Connor.
Relative statement.
Yeah. And then I think a lot of Orlando fans who watched closely didn't feel that way. And obviously they failed to score at home. It was a great crowd, a great atmosphere. One of the things about Orlando last year was the attack worked and the defense worked. They didn't work together at the same time in games. The team was disconnected. When they threw numbers into the attack, they created opportunities. When they sat deep as a group, they were able to defend. Unfortunately, the game goes both ways. And so Oscar Pereja's job, I don't think, is to rework patterns in the attack to create a new style or to, you know, reestablish how they defend. It's connecting those two things so your team can move as a cohesive unit, your lines stay tighter, you're able to cover ground as a team, you press as a team, and therefore you're able to control games or stay in games. That's what Oscar Pereja's Dallas teams were like kind of after the first year was they never beat themselves, they were never out of games, and then they outworked you and they were able to get results. The improvements they made at center back, Junior Urso in central midfield alongside Mendez, and they hope with Nani coming back alongside a healthy Pereja, they should be able to do that. They should be able to cover more ground. They should be more athletic. They're younger. So those are the things that Pereja's working on, and I don't think you're just going to see it like that in week one or two, and I don't think there's going to be one huge moment where you're like, it clicked. It's going to be the team playing better front to back, playing more connected week after week. RSL was a good one to start with because they started like 18 defenders and Tate Schmidt.
They had 0.16 expected goals. Yeah. Like they barely even saw the goal.
Tate Schmidt literally tripped on himself trying to defend Juan at one point. So it was a good start for them. So I'm interested to see if Pereja can keep them on track week after week going forward.
They're going to Colorado or Orlando City Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus. They will not have Nani. They will probably not have Dom Dwyer. He was out of the 18 last week with a lower body issue. Probably not have him too. So it's probably, again, it's Akindele, it's Michelle, it's Chris Mueller. I mean,
shout,
I think the big
Chris
question
Mueller
right now is how do you keep that defensive structure? And as you said, connect them, but also connect them when you don't have your quote-unquote top-tier talent in the attack. Can Oscar get the best out of those guys when he needs to right now when they're just trying to pick up points and build a little bit of confidence? I'm watching Sporting Kansas City, and everybody at home is going, oh, of course you would be watching Sporting Kansas City. But I went and looked, and I'm not like the biggest expected goal guy. You know, I use it as context. It's not the end-all, be-all. But I was really shocked that after that game against Vancouver, they just had 0.52 expected goals. But it makes sense. Gaidy Kinda, off-foot banger. That's not going to happen every single week. Spin move from Gerso and then Eric Hurtado at the back post. That's definitely not going to happen every week. And then Alan Pulido cleaning things up in the box. I could see that happening most weeks. People said we like railed on their defense, and Charlie really came out here and said, hey, I'm not buying into this, and I understand why he didn't, because Vancouver's expected goals was north of two, and Vancouver doesn't
2.7.
have, Vancouver does not have a team that many are scared of from an attacking sense right now. So that is an issue. But I'm more curious to see if the attack holds at home against the Dynamo, because the Dynamo are missing big stars as well. You don't have Albert Elise in there. It looks like no Darwin Quintero. This is a game, if you're Kansas City after last season and your struggles at home, just seven wins, that you look at and say, we have to win this game. Not that it's a must win, but for sort of our mentality, the trajectory of our season, our confidence, we need to get a win here. Can we replicate what we did against Vancouver? When it was, I'm not going to say lucky, but there was some fortunate aspects of the goals they scored just in the level of skill and the difficulty that won't, I think, translate week to week.
They need to win this game if they're going to do what Adam and SKC guarantees that they will do. A now new official member of the KC Cauldron, so shout out to Adam, and he basically said he was going to call guarantee that Joseph Martinez wouldn't score 20 this year. That's obviously not available anymore, so we'll change it to this. I guarantee SKC will be in the top three in the West and have the largest point increase from last year in MLS. Their increase will be at least seven more points than any other team increase their point total. Then they got to beat Houston at home.
Yeah. If you're going to do anything around that, you must win games at home against other teams that were outside the playoffs and probably will stay outside the playoffs this year as well. I mean, look, 38 points in 2019, that is far below what we expect from Sporting Kansas City. I think that I had them sort of up in the like 50-point range. So you're looking at a 12-year, year-over-year improvement. I don't know that there's any other teams out there that have that sort of potential jump other than Columbus Crew.
Yeah.
And the Crew would be the team that I choose to have the bigger jump between them and Sporting Kansas City. All right, let's get
TFC might have a large point jump in the end as well, whether it's a standing jump or not.
TFC was up at 50 points. How, like, what are they going to get to?
If they're healthy?
They're going to get to 65, 70?
Do you think they could win the East?
There is a scenario in which they win the East.
Then you're at 60-plus. Right?
Yeah, that's fair.
But then you're talking a 10 to 15 point increase.
Okay.
Not saying it's going to happen, but potential.
Thank you,
exists.
Adam. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Let's get into the mailbag. And let's start with Anonymous here. How should CCL teams handle this weekend? Because you know we got the fever. You know we're thinking about it. Montreal, what do you think Thierry Henry should do? At Dallas, and then they're at home on Tuesday against Olympia.
If it's me, I don't really send my best. I don't send some guys to Dallas. I think the Rod Fannies, who are crucial to what they do right now, and he's 37 years old. The guys like Bojan, who you need in the starting lineup because you don't have anyone else who can do what they do. Why send them to Dallas to come back and play in this game in which, if you knock out Olympia, you're in the semifinals of the CCL. That alone is a flag for your season. We made it to the final four of the Champions League. We potentially did something that no other MLS team will do this year. That alone is an accomplishment, and you'd have that done in March. So, and you're talking about going on the road in MLS, never easy.
Dallas lost one game last year in Frisco.
And one they looked game. Really good week one against Philly. They don't have to travel, so everything's in Dallas's favor. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a B Montreal team go in there.
Safir Tadair, I wouldn't play him. I wouldn't even travel him, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still waiting Orji Okwankwo to perhaps come back here at some point. You go for a draw. You go to Dallas and you play for a draw, straight up.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. How about Atlanta? Figuring out the Joseph Martinez situation? I mean, do you put, at this point, when you go to Mexico on Wednesday to play Club America and it's a rematch of Campeones Cup,
yeah,
how much do you put into CCL at this point? Or do you shift the way you're thinking and say, you know what, our ceiling just changed drastically? This competition that we believed we could win when we had Joseph Martinez for obvious reasons, we're not as confident in. It's actually more important for us to try to get as many points as we can in the league before teams either figure us out or it doesn't work. Would you hold anything back if you're Frank
no.
DeBoer? You have till Wednesday, so you have a little bit of time, yeah. But you do have to travel to Mexico.
I wouldn't hold anything back in that game because I think you saw them against Club America be able to go toe-to-toe with them last year with a lot of the pieces, star players that are still there. And I just think there's a Club America team that's struggling. You saw what they did against Comunicaciones. The game doesn't have to be open. You don't need to be LAFC and score 7 goals in this series to get a win. I think you can come in, play tight, and get a moment of brilliance from PT and Barco and get yourself through Club America. And then you're looking at LAFC or Cruz Azul after that, where I think Cruz Azul is more beatable than America, and LAFC is an MLS team, so you have to have confidence that you can go toe-to-toe with any MLS team. So for them, I think you're putting everything in this. I also think it's a way for you to bounce back as a club mentally to say, we are Atlanta United. This is what we've said as ourselves. You know, as a team, it was an emotional experience losing Joseph Martinez in the first game for that. It's not just happening to Joseph. It's happening to that whole group. This is an opportunity to get a result in Mexico City at the Azteca with the world against you for Frank DeBoer to walk in that locker room and say, we can still accomplish everything we believe in.
I think that he should use this weekend as a way to figure out how it's going to work for that Wednesday game. You have time to rest. It's early in the season. You shouldn't be worn down just yet. You didn't have midweek because Champions League got spaced out a little bit, so you didn't have to go Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday. I think you should try to play the way you think you might, and maybe you try the false nine. Maybe Adam Jan comes off later. Maybe you just mix things up a little bit.
So the false
just
nine
go for
thing,
a win. Get the confidence. Like, get it off your
yeah.
Get the bad taste out of
your false
mouth.
Nine thing, I thought you said it best, which is they haven't worked on it. It's something maybe they'll slowly work on now, but it's not something you roll out before it's ready, and it's not something that's ready now. So you put Adam John in there, you try and be strong defensively, and wait for those moments.
Without Miles Robinson right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, TBD. How about NYCFC?
And potentially without Franco Escobar.
Yeah. At Toronto, they're home against Tigres on Wednesday. Yeah. And home, I mean Red Bull Arena.
So you know Chanel has to sit. So that's kind of a big one on the back line and pretty much your oldest player along that back line. So you don't really have to make a decision there. And you've got depth everywhere else. You know, if it's not Sands, it's Keaton Parks. If it's not Tajiri Shradi, it's Medina. You kind of have flexibility. The two, Maxi and Eber, what do you do with them? You know, how much do you risk them? And I think this is another team that should be looking at it and saying, we have a shot at winning CCL, and we're about to play against, I think, the best team in the region. So I think your focus should be there, whether it means Eber for 45, 50 minutes in Toronto or none at all.
Castellanos maybe needs a little bit of run
yeah.
to get going too. Give him a chance. LAFC, Philly, they're at home. Then they play Thursday. Bob Bradley's not changing anything. He's going for it. It feels like this season we're like, oh, how are they going to manage this? What will Bob Bradley do? He'll just go for everything.
So, but that still has question marks in their lineup because they've got depth. Does Atuesta have to start to give Gianella another chance? Does Harvey start? Does Palacio start? Dejan Jakovic is kind of the big one.
That's the nice thing is that even if Jordan Harvey starts, he's the starting left back for the best regular season team mm-hmm. in MLS history. It's not like they're choosing between great and not so great. They're yeah. choosing between great and great. Every option is good.
I would be interested to see if Adrian Perez gets a start to see what does a center forward look like. I thought he's been strong in his minutes. Maybe Bob just looks at that in a live game. And then the other question mark's Atuesta. Whether or not he starts, he's coming back from injury. He might. I thought what Taylor said is he's their most important player at a lot of times, and it seems like he's their highest prospect. I wouldn't risk him in this game.
Yeah, save him. Save him, I would say. They play at home against Cruz Azul on Thursday.
You ready for some real mailbag?
Yeah,
not
go for it.
Mailbag. Yep. Mike Molinaro says, this week around town, hashtag Dairy Block has had different vibes surrounding the Colorado Rapids. Having the call-up was awesome, and engagement with the fans is new, so you can check out that call-up episode. Jill and Susanna were in Denver.
Yeah, and they're on YouTube now. This was their
YouTube
first
now.
YouTube show joining
with
us here.
Kai and Keegs.
Yes.
He's pumped what Smith is trying to do in Colorado. He wanted our take on the new homegrown signing and Will Vint, as well as a possible, which is now real, signing of William Yarborough.
Yarborough, did Colorado announce that? I haven't seen. They did? No, I think Leon.
I saw him do an interview Leon where he said thank you to Leon.
Leon announced it. I have not seen Colorado announce it, but I expect that that's coming. Like, that's that Yarborough one is competition for Clint Irwin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you need to have two that are number one capable. And Yarborough is a legend with Leon. So says Tom Marshall, and I believe Tom. And I just think it's cool to get him back. He's one of those guys that's like Gringo Torres, where you were just like, man, one day maybe that guy's going to come back to MLS. And we never got it with Gringo. We got it with Edgar Castillo. We haven't got it with like Ventura Alvarado, but there's been some back and forth. This is one where you're like, I knew that guy back in the day. He had a sniff with the U.S. when Klinsmann was around, and now it's cool to see him come. What about Vint? I don't know anything about him.
Good two-way central midfielder, went and played for Man U's academy because his family was over there, has been in Atlanta's academy as well, and they weren't dying to keep him, but he's a player that started for their U17s and is talented for what Colorado wants to do. I think he fits in well. He's a two-way player, clean with the ball, and also they just want more young pieces. It's just more rolls at the dice for them. When you look at the amount of academy players they've brought into the first team and what they've been building, it's impressive. And I think he just fits into that. They've got the switchbacks right down the street who you can, you know, right down the road that you can get guys minutes with as well. So that's a good one for them. Matt Brookins wants to know, he knows it's a little late, but who do you think will be the most impactful player we saw switch in MLS this offseason? He can give you some of his big contenders: Gressel, Katai, Darwin Quintero, Zimmerman, possibly Robles or BWP. Some have already made some impacts to their new spots.
I'm gonna say Zimmerman. I think that for
the highest priced one.
Well, for what Nashville's trying to do, he will have the most trickle down, I think, than any of the other players, except for maybe Gressel. Luis Robles, you know exactly what you're getting from him. His impact, I think, is very, very clear. Gressel, for me right now, it's up in the air. He was in a perfect situation for him, it seemed, in Atlanta. Well, now the situation is different, and he has additional pressure and expectations because he's got a bunch of money, which he deserved, but now comes with sort of a price, right? The price is that you need to be productive. The price is that your previous production is why we paid you this money. Now, can he do that in the middle? Will he have to move right? That's an open question, but I think Walker Zimmerman, over the course of the entire season, and sort of the safety blanket that he provides, and oh, by the way, also the goal scoring, which is a huge question mark for Nashville, I wouldn't be shocked if he's like maybe even their top goal scorer, second or third for sure, in my opinion, unless they go get a DP number 9 before the end of this window. I think Zimmerman, and again, that is low-hanging fruit because he's the most expensive, because he's a best 11 center back, but that's my honest answer.
Second most expensive is Nagby. I think that's one you have to mention. He'll be key to what they do. Last year, one of the big ones was Keegan Rosenberry, was one of three outfield players to play every minute. I don't know that he'll have the same style of impact, but I think Zarek Valentin will be a lockdown starter at a spot of need for Houston, and that could be a good pickup where you start to look at, you know, 2 years down the road, oh, where did we get this guy? When did he come? I think he could be a solid soldier.
Can I throw out Madunyanin?
Yeah.
Here's Madunyanin. I mean, look, we still have a lot of questions about FC Cincinnati, but if they are to be something that is more stable than they have been in the last year, then that signing, you mentioned guys that played every single minute. He played every minute for the Union, for a playoff team, for a upwardly trending playoff team. Maybe he can have at least a little bit of that.
I also like Fafa Pico going to Dallas. But you mentioned Cincinnati. Bryce from Cincinnati had two questions. One, what do you think about Robbie Robinson for Miami? Do you think he stays as the starter at center forward? But more importantly, Locadia came in, showed he can be good, and add De Jong coming in there. I think there's a chance that that last playoff spot, if the defense can hold up. Do you agree about Cincinnati?
I mean, if the defense holds up, anything's possible. But the defense did not hold up in any conceivable way in 2019. And you had your coach leave just from the jump. And I'm not sure I look at that back line and the talent and say, this is a no-duh improvement. You guys are going to be so much better. I mean, it's very much a just kind of like reach in a hat and grab something. And if it's anywhere from, I want to say, 7th to dead last in the Eastern Conference, I'd believe any of it for FC Cincinnati.
So what's interesting, though, is if you're a season ticket holder for FC Cincinnati, you do get some gifts. And if you reached in that hat and you took a look, Jonathan Askin sent us some great pictures. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see them now, of the march in FC Cincinnati. You would see Andrew Weavy on the left with his phone up. Yeah. Weavy, that's your experience.
Hashtag influencers in the wild right here.
This is the march. This is it.
This is it.
You can have it on a coaster.
I'm enjoying that so much. You can see it from my squinting. It must have been very, very sunny. Just a beautiful day in Cincinnati.
So you can't pick against this. I mean, this is.
I said anywhere to seventh. Seventh is in the playoffs.
That looks like a Sporting Shield winner to me.
That's hopeful. We end here, Eric Erickson. I've been listening to Extra Time Radio for many years, and I've never laughed harder than when Charlie said he had to go to the bathroom. I had to go watch the video. When he raised his hand, I lost it again. Thanks for the laughs. If you watch the minute or so before Charlie raises his hand, you can also see him.
Did you go back and watch?
You can see him mentally running in place and realizing that something was coming that he could not stop and that he would have to pause the show for.
I have never experienced anything like that in my professional career. Yeah, I do quotes because we host a podcast about MLS.
For sure. All right, that's it from us. Big thanks to Taylor Twellman for joining us. Go check out Banter if you haven't already. It's on demand, so you can go watch it right now before the weekend. It's well worth your time. And every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, I'll say it again, and I still don't completely understand it. Review, rate, share.
That's how we get pushed up.
Yeah, I guess that's
all
that's
we've
how
been
we grow,
doing
baby.
Is promoting other shows on this show for the last like 3 weeks.
Yeah. So tell your friends. You know, you're at the game Saturday, Sunday, or you're talking to somebody like, I like MLS. Like, do you like Extra Time? Prophesize for us. Spread the good word.
At some point in that stadium, Andrew's voice will come across the loudspeaker to some video, and you'll say, does that guy sound cool? No? Well, he's got friends who are. You can watch them all twice a week.
Boom. Okay.
Sorry.
We'll see you on Monday. We'll be right back.